Hello and welcome to the Lovo Show podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Thanks for tuning in and being here. Today our guest is Dwaba and we are going to talk about how a beautiful Hollywood actress arrived to Osho and ended up living in India starting a project to save children's life. I'm so excited to have Dwaba on the show. Dwaba is a remarkable woman who lives an incredible life and has an extraordinary story to tell. I hope you enjoy the show with Dwaba. Dwaba, welcome to the show. How are you?
Yes, very, very well. Very happy to be able to be doing this with you guys today.
To start, tell us a bit about your background before meeting Osho.
Yes, I was living in Los Angeles and struggling for 9 years as a wannabe actress, and facing a lot of difficulties doing that. Working as a cocktail waitress at night, put myself through university, keep a promise to my mother that if I pursued acting, I had to also pursue a real career. So my real career was to get a degree in psychology, but my interest was in trying to follow my love for acting. And the acting was extremely difficult and heartbreaking. And what can I say? The Me Too pretty much says it all that's going around. And in one of those extreme Me Too situations, the producer was involved in an argument with another producer over which guru in the world was more bankrollable. And one of them was arguing for the Bhagwan. And a book was involved, and I got that book and was in Pune 9 days later.
Tell us your first meeting with Osho and what happened then.
Well, it was very interesting because I had no idea where I was going. I had never heard anything about Pune. I read Only One Sky, the book on Tantra. That was the book that the producer had for backing his arguments. So my convoluted mind had the idea that there wouldn't be anyone else there, that he would be somewhere in the Himalayas and he would know that I was coming and I would go there and gain amazing wisdom that would actually give me all the tools I needed to come back to Hollywood and be a great star. So arriving in the filthy, overcrowded industrial city of Pune was a huge shock and absolutely unexpected, followed by the first day to visit the ashram, which was, he was speaking Hindi. I was put in the very back and immediately deemed smelly. I could barely see him. And the experience at the very back with people who truly were smelly, which made me even more annoyed that I had been to that category. I left the discourse at the end and went to the office demanding to be given an interview with the Bhagwan and was promptly told by Lakshmi, his secretary, that I needed to do a camp. I insisted that I was not a Girl Scout. I didn't come to do camps, and I left the ashram and went to a travel agent to book my ticket. I had, in my opinion, made a terrible mistake. I got very sick that afternoon before I could change the ticket, and very, very sick. Maybe dengue, maybe just a deep cleansing. Whatever it was, I met Osho exactly 21 days later, and in that meeting was given my name, Deva Dwaba.
So you were trying to escape, but somehow you couldn't.
No, I absolutely couldn't. And once I sat in front of him and looked into his eyes, there was never any question of escaping. It was all a bit confusing because he asked me how long I would stay. And my ticket was actually, I had come on a charter very cheap. It was going to expire in 2 days. And I told him that and he laughed uproariously and said, good, be here forever. And I thought, well, he's old. He doesn't hear well. So I repeated it. No, I leave in 2 days. And he laughed again and said, you've come home. Do you want to do a few groups? And I thought, how could I do a few groups in 2 days? And he just started giving me all these groups, of course, that they write down and give you a paper. And I thought, well, this is so strange. But on the other hand, of course, I don't want to leave, and didn't for years. And let's be very honest, I haven't left yet. He was absolutely right. I never really left India again, except to get the money to either be there with him or, after he left the body, to open the children's project where I am now in Rishikesh. But India has been my absolute home since that night when he told me that I had come home. And indeed I have.
So let's talk about the project you just mentioned now. You are a remarkable woman, and I'm sure all the listeners will get to know you through this interview, and especially for many things, but especially for the project that you run in Rishikesh. You run an orphanage for kids who have not just lost their parents, but they have experienced the most difficult situations in life at a very young age. So before we get into the details of that, I'd like to know the story of how this came about. How did you manage from being in India with Osho to then ending up in Rishikesh and opening an orphanage?
Well, first I have to clarify that it's not only an orphanage. We call it a home for children at risk. And I certainly will go in and take a girl, especially if the father is, in many cases of my beautiful girls is the case, father has murdered the mother, often in front of them, and then is abusing the little girls. So I certainly take them. And, of course, any child who has no parents. But it's not a, quote-unquote, official orphanage. I take children that, to be honest, now we're so overcrowded. I take any child that is so at risk that I feel they might not be there to take in the morning if I don't take them today. So that cleared. How? I think for most of us, Osho leaving the body came as a huge shock. It certainly did for me. He was young, certainly younger than I am now. I just didn't see that coming. I saw there were problems with his health, but I really didn't see that coming. And when it happened, it was a huge shock. My greatest pain was feeling that I had missed. Counting all the darshans I had missed, counting the days I'd been in Goa or wherever else, and not sitting at his feet. That was extremely painful for me. And I look back on everything I'd ever heard him say about when he left. Of course, when I heard it, sitting discourse, that was like, miles down the road, you know, well, I'll be awakened by then, whatever. Well, I certainly wasn't awakened and was keenly aware of just how unawakened I was. And said, okay, it's over. I will pick up my life. And I had borrowed some money from a woman and wanted to clear all the debts and all the debts and let her know that I was doing that. And she had moved to Lucknow, to Papaji, and informed me that she wanted me to bring the money there. And I actually wrote a rather nasty, there weren't emails, it was a fact, saying, I'm happy you found daddy, but I'm not looking for a papa or a daddy, and I will put the money in your bank. And bless her and thank her, she insisted I bring it and take the ticket out of it, and I did, and flew to Lucknow. And wow, it's pretty much history after that. Met Papaji and was deeply, deeply touched. Deeply touched as much by anything by his availability that one could really, as I couldn't at Osho, live physically at his feet. One could be in his house, eat meals with him, go places with him, walk with him, hold his hand. I wanted that very badly and stayed and moved my life to Lucknow. And just 8 short months later, he announced that we were going on a pilgrimage to the River Ganga. And on that pilgrimage, he informed me that he was not my master and that I would never have master in physical form again, that Ganga was my teacher, River Ganga, and that I needed to move into a cave where he had lived on and off for 15 years until I could speak her language, the language of the river. Not easy, but I did it. Doing that, I discovered children, I discovered tribals, I discovered the inequality in education and medical, I discovered insane malnutrition, and my heart said, you cannot leave without doing something about this. Doing what? I had no idea. I had no background in social work. I had no idea, but I knew the call. I had to do something, only to educate and feed the kids that came to my cave. That had to be done. Medicate, educate, and do some feed, nutrition. So it started there in the cave, and it never stopped. Hasn't stopped yet today. Haven't lived a single day since 1994 that I wasn't in a construction site of varying sorts, including today. I'm not. I'm out working to get the money to construct more.
Wow, this is fascinating to say the least. And there are so many points that I would like to expand, and so many questions. And, you know, it's mysterious, it's fascinating, it's mystical, and it's beautiful that you ended up and you're doing what you're doing now. But to me, obviously, this is a Love Osho podcast, and I like to link everything back to Osho. So I'd like to ask you, what is it that you learned from Osho that helps you today to do what you're doing?
Everything. Everything, which I did, went back, and I was so lucky that, so grateful that Silver Platter existed, and I could actually really go back and read everything he said about children and how children needed to be raised and what his vision for children becoming the new man was. And he's been my absolute guidepost in creating Romana's Garden and trying to do it as close to what I think and felt was his vision, absolutely, in every way. And right down to how grateful am I to have been in Rajneeshpuram. Hated it then, to be critically honest. Those who know me know I hated it. Hated the mud, hated the cold, hated constructing in what I considered unbearable conditions. But so grateful I did learn how to build from the ground up. I learned, actually, every single aspect of building, and have been able, on a shoestring budget, to build all the structures in Romana's Garden. Many, many involved with my own hands. I learned brickwork. I learned how to build a proper foundation. I learned how to lay sewage pipes. I learned how to raise and grow cows and my own food. And we are absolutely self-sufficient thanks to that, in that we grow everything organic. If we don't grow it, we don't eat it. We can feed all those that we love in our best organic cafe, rated way high in TripAdvisor. So we not only feed us, we feed 300 school children who come in every day, and the hundreds who come to eat every day in our cafe. I certainly learned that in Oregon. I learned how to grow all our own cows and expanded that into goats and chickens. And so we have our own milk and our own eggs. We don't eat meat, of course. Yes, gratitude, nothing but gratitude, which brings me to the next phase, which is watching Wild Wild Country. I went, no, that is so wrong. No, wait a minute. I will write a rebuttal, and I'm doing that right now. By the time this comes out, God willing, and all the gods, 108 of them, it will be out, called The Master's Game, What Netflix Was Afraid to Tell You. I will answer what I feel happened there and what I'm living today that happened there.
And I really look forward to reading your book. And one of the reasons why I decided to start this podcast is exactly a sort of reaction of consequence of Wild Wild Country. I had in mind to do this for a long time, but it gave me the kick in the bottom. It's time for people to start shifting the conversation around Osho from what is the triviality of the Rolls Royce and those kind of low-level, mediocre mind kind of argument to what really counts. And the reason why I'm interviewing people like you
is that you are a testimony of what Osho's work can do, and your whole life and what you're doing now with the kids is incredible. And it's definitely up to you, your individual power, your beauty, but also obviously it's encountering Osho that inspired you in many different ways.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't be where I am doing what I'm doing without Osho, and don't take a single step that I don't feel his feet next to me. And I actually started this book without Wild Country in 2010, and a friend who was a large and quite popular bankroller for Hollywood films turned it into a major producer, and he paid me to come to LA and offered me a very large sum of money if I would allow him the rights to edit it. And what he wanted to edit was Osho. He insisted that I show Osho to be the villain that he was, and the first bioterrorist, and et cetera, et cetera. And I refused and said, no way. You take Osho out of my book and out of my life, and I don't have a life left. So, no. And thank God that went down that way, because I have the section already written that he wanted out. So it's really more of a rewrite and an addition, but I have the core, and it was that core that I didn't take money then and will gratefully take it now for telling the truth.
I hope that people like you will have more and more space to give voice to your experience, because, you know, for me, that's what really counts. So I've got a question from my partner, Chetna. It's perhaps a question from woman to woman.
Okay.
When Osho started giving sannyas, he called all women with the prefix ma and the men with the prefix swami. And he says, Osho says about ma, the feminine path is that of love, and love brings you to an ultimate point where you can mother the whole existence. And that is the meaning of ma. A woman in an ultimate flowering becomes a mothering energy. She can mother the whole existence. She feels blessed, and she can bless the whole existence. So that was a quote from Osho. Is this your path as a woman, becoming a mother, not just to your own children, but in a much wider sense?
Yes, absolutely. There's no question for me about that. Seeing how tremendous the gift has been to be given this enormous blessing to be able to be mother to all of these children and villagers, because I'm a midwife, so I have the joy of delivering babies. That's as cool. I didn't have any of my own, following Osho's guidance on that. Grateful that I didn't. 70 is more than enough. And but yes, I do believe that we mother first ourselves, and when we have healed and become whole in that ma, that, I don't know, I didn't look for it, it came. And I still teach around the world, and never stop teaching Osho what he gave me the assignment to create the Women's Liberation Group together with Hasia, and I've never stopped teaching that. Birthing women into their rebirth as goddesses. And I will be leaving in just 10 short days to do that once again in Romania and Turkey. And we don't know where after that. I'm doing it right now. That's why we're having this interview in Bali. I came and have been doing that for the last 6 weeks. So that is as much birthing as birthing a baby. Osho was very clear that each and every woman has to be reborn back into her independent power and cut the dysfunctional dependence thinking that she will not survive without a man.
That's beautiful and very powerful. And I think this is one aspect that is not very much talked about, how much Osho gave space to women and empowered women. He put all women in charge in his communes. He gave lots of responsibilities to women. And that's partly, I believe, it's due to the fact that down the ages, women have been neglected, repressed, not given a chance to flower in their beautiful energies. I think you represent that aspect of Osho's work on women.
Well, he said very, very clear. I mean, he directed, literally. We, Hasi and I, had to create what we thought would be day one, day two, day three, and it got sent in to him, and it came back with red X's on it, comments in the margins. He created, literally, the Women's Liberation Group. And he said very, very clearly, until every woman liberates herself from the bondage to her fear, which goes all the way back to the cave, that she is dependent, as she was then. We were not out slaying the saber-toothed tigers. We were in the warm cave. We will find a way to manipulate and enslave men subtly. Therefore, we will prevent ourselves through that enslavement and the attempt to enslave them from ever knowing liberation, and will prevent them, make it difficult for them. And that's why he insisted the process be created and done again and again and again in Pune, and why I'm still doing it. Wow, I'm 66 now. How many years? I don't know. I'm not any better at math than I was in grade school. But yes, I do believe why he empowered women to such a degree, and he said it very clear. Unless we come back into our true empowerment and our true nature, we will sacrifice our power out of fear.
If you were to condense in a 2-minute answer what you're doing with the kids at Ramana's Garden, what would that be?
Well, the kids come from the worst of the worst of the worst backgrounds. They come from tremendous abuse. When I was younger, people say, why don't you do it now? Because I don't run well. That's the only reason. But 25 years ago, I actually went in and rescued them right out of brothels, or out of the sale that was being made for them, straight into brothels. Their backgrounds are horrific. I'm not a psychologist, psychiatrist. All I know is love. And I've seen it time and time again. These kids heal with love. They heal with empowerment. They empower themselves through every form of art. They dance. They dance in the number one spa in Asia every Saturday. They've gone to England and danced for the Duchess of Windsor in Harry Potter's castle. They empower themselves with creativity, exactly as Osho said we should and must. They empower themselves knowing that they are loved. They are empowered being shown, because words fall short, that they are valuable. And being shown, as Osho taught us so well, whatever happened to them, to us, to anyone, makes us who we are today, and helping them understand that they are not untouchable and they are not all the things they've been told. But in fact, because of all that happened to them, they are stronger. They have all the resources they need to dare to dream and create their future as they want to. And they are. They are doctors, engineers, pilots, biomed professors, filmmakers, animators, soon to be lawyers. They are empowered, and they are living their dream, fueled by love, creativity, and self-confidence that comes from love and creativity.
Talking to people who have been with Osho, one common denominator is that feeling of love emanating from Osho. And that's the same thing I feel when talking to people like you and other that were close to Osho. This love that emanates from Osho has been imbibed, and somehow you pass it over and you're spreading love. And in your case, you're doing this wonderful work with the kids. I think that's a key for transformation.
It is the key, and for me, it was always the key. I came to Osho a very damaged, broken, dysfunctional young woman, truly facing a lot of challenges in my life, challenges in all my relationships, challenges with drugs. I was broken. And in one instant, looking into his eyes, I felt unconditional love for the first and only time in my life. It didn't matter who I was, and it didn't matter how broken I was, and nothing I'd done mattered. In that moment, I saw what it was to be loved unconditionally. And I'm sure he saw exactly who I was. He named me Devadwaba, which means divine chaos, and spoke to me very clearly about the darkness just before dawn, and told me point blank, stay with me. The stars are born from the darkness just before dawn. Stay with me. I'll make you a star. I thought that night he meant a Hollywood star. I'm so grateful it meant so, so much bigger, greater, brighter star. But that star was unconditional love, and I saw it that night and knew I would never live a life that didn't have it again. Thought it meant never leaving him. Well, he was gone. Hello, wake up, Dwaba. Okay, so create that life. Find a way. But we cannot, or we, I don't know, I don't want to live without that, what I saw in his eyes that first night. That changed everything on the spot.
That's very powerful and beautiful. So, Dwaba, let's now move from unconditional love to a more practical and difficult and real challenges. You run these projects. How do you financially sustain it in a country which is notoriously, you know, especially in Rishikesh, I don't think there are many resources available to you.
This is has to be the grace of Osho and all the masters and all the gods, because there is no explanation for how it happens. I often don't know how it happens. We get down to times when there's a few hundred dollars left. And it costs us over $100 a day just to feed the kids, because we feed 300 school children every day. When those kind of things happen, miracles happen. I don't know, and I only expect them. I mean, the group that I did the longest and the furthest all over Europe and all over everywhere from Osho was called Trusting the Impossible Before Breakfast. And this project is really, really that. I mean, I can remember years ago, there was a moment when I was running 68 schools, and suddenly the teachers and cooks appeared saying, we don't have any rations to feed today. And I said, my God, why didn't you tell me that yesterday? And they said, yesterday we had, which I love so much about India's trust. You had yesterday, so you didn't worry. Okay. So while we were having a serious meeting to figure out how to solve that, the watchman came and said, there's a group at the gate. And I said, no, 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 not now. We have a crisis. Well, the kids let them in. It was a Japanese group who had gotten lost. They were looking for a Buddha stupa. The kids sang for them, danced for them, entertained them, and they gave the children $1,000. So while I was still trying to figure out how to come up with bananas and buns, the kids came running in with all these $100 bills saying, Mom, 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 look what the tourists gave us. Okay. Yeah. And I can't say that happens every day, but we are still open 25 years later and expanding every single day. Sometimes I come out and work, like right now. Okay. Other times, in 2 days, by the time this airs, we'll know. I get nominated around the world for awards. On Wednesday, I stand to get the one, which is 100,000. Let's hope I do. That'll help. I don't know how it happens. I don't know how I get nominated. But okay, it comes from somewhere whenever we need it.
Beautiful. And that's real trust in existence and some kind of miracle that keeps happening for 25 years. So it's something more than a miracle, I'd say. I'd like to invite anyone who is listening this podcast, if you are willing and able to help, Dwaba is doing something absolutely extraordinary. If you have a chance to visit Rishikesh, you can see it with your own eyes. Ramana's Garden is a place where she's doing this incredible job of helping children who would never be able to perhaps even live, have a life, not even a normal life, having a life at all.
And a life at all. It's absolutely the truth. And I heard Osho sitting there say that if he'd had a master, it would have been Ramana. And so right then and there, and he told wonderful stories about Ramana. Beautiful stories, the Lakshmi, the cow, so many. And I remember sitting there on the floor that day in Buddha Hall, and I thought, well, you know, someday I will go to Ramana's ashram. And of course I did, and that is why the project is dedicated to Ramana Maharshi. For me, it was clear that that was what the name would be, because there wouldn't be any controversy. And it's good I made that choice, because had I called it Osho's Garden with Wild Wild Country going down, we might have been in trouble.
Yeah, but things will change. I personally decided to keep the name Osho exactly because I want this to change. You know, people need to open their eyes. Even if it doesn't work in my lifetime, next generation, it will happen. You know, people have to open their eyes and recognize Osho as a master of love, an enlightened mystic, came to this earth to help people and just stop talking about all that nonsense. It has to happen.
I totally agree. I wasn't in a position to do that because Rishikesh is the Hindu capital of Hinduism. I couldn't. It wasn't about my life. It was about hundreds and hundreds, thousands at that point. My schools had 1,800 kids in them when I started.
Where people can find you if they want to get in touch with you, know more about what you're doing, and also give some donation and support you?
They can go to my website, which is Ramana's Garden Children's Home, and that will pretty much tell them everything that's happening at home. They can also go to our website. We have two, www.ramanas.org. And the first one I created way back when, www.sayyesnow.org. And my foundations around the world said, oh, Dwapar, the world's changing. People aren't going to scroll down and read all that. We have to update it. So I said, okay, you guys make one, and I'll keep mine for the old fogies like me who like to curl up with a cup of tea and scroll down. So we have two, sayyesnow.org. And for those who don't have time to scroll down, ramanas.org.
Perfect. And I'll link your website to the notes of the show.
Thanks.
So we are heading towards the end. I've got final three questions for you. The first question is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours?
Well, to do what I'm doing, I have to practice a lot. I mean, Osho certainly taught us that. The practice of choice for me in the moment is Kundalini yoga. I love it, combining yoga with chanting. So I usually follow Osho's directive to try to sit straight up before the first bird or with the first bird, to be up and in meditation as the sun rises, in hopes that it'll raise my consciousness. Let's see. And after sitting for 45 to an hour, then I do my practice, which is pretty active to keep me active. So right around 6, my day changes into good morning. And getting all the kids fed and ready for school. And then we gather at 7 down on our assembly, where we gather and sing. We sing Gayatri Mantra. We sing a bunch of songs about how we're the ones that are going to make the difference. And we have some fun. If it's a birthday, we have a birthday party then and there, whatever. Announcements, developments, new babies. And they toddle off to school, and I settle in for whatever the day is going to bring. Hopefully breakfast before I have to deliver a baby, or this politician at the gate who is insisting that the boundary is illegal or whatever. But that's usually, and hopefully they aren't, and I get to have a breakfast on my fabulous restaurant called Ramona's Gardens Terrace overlooking Mother Ganga. And then I go down to Mother Ganga and actually, if it's not freezing, have a dip and offer once more a prayer of tremendous gratitude for all that I'm given, my kids are given, just the joy of being able to live on our banks, hopefully for the rest of that day in peace.
The second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why? Perhaps you already answered this question.
No, I didn't answer, and it's not a Brahma. I've always loved it from the very first time, and I still use it in all my groups. I love Nada Brahma.
I personally never liked Nada Brahma for many years. I just would fall asleep. You know, I just wouldn't get it. But then after years of dynamic, at some point I got it. And I have to say, it's the most mysterious, amazing meditation. And now it's, I still love dynamic more, but Nada Brahma comes after.
Yeah, I love dynamic too. And I make all my participants do it. Can't say I do it at home. But I do Nada Brahma whenever I need to really tune in.
Okay, so the last question is, you lead the OSH experiment. You were one of those pioneers in the movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean for you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
I think it means the same thing it always meant, except it's a little more, I have to stretch a little further because I can't just show up and walk into Buddha Hall. But for me, nothing else has changed. He gave us everything, and when I think he didn't, I just have to look a little deeper. I think we're still moving toward his vision. My book really brings that out, that wasn't an experiment that failed. It failed in America because it had to fail in America and had to become each and every one of us's experiment to create the new man. Whether we could have done different in America, I don't know or care. We didn't. Russian Forum was an experiment. Osho said it failed. I don't know if it failed. It implanted in each and every one of us the seed to carry on that experiment. And I don't think it has to fail. It's the same. Nothing's changed. He's just a little harder to access, or maybe not.
Thank you so much. It's been a real, real pleasure talking to you. This is the end of the show, and it's just incredible to hear your story. And I invite everyone to get to know what you're doing. Everyone who is listening to this podcast, if you don't know Ramana's Gardens and what Dwaba is doing with the kids, just go online, look at the website. If you travel to India, go to Rishikesh. It's just incredible. And Dwaba is still here and now today doing this amazing job. So get inspired. And if you want to do something good in life, you can look up at Dwaba.
Thank you for that. There's no joy greater than the joy that you have when you give to another human being their wings to fly. Maybe you fly and maybe you don't, but when you see another human being, especially one whose wings were broken, mend them or grow new ones and fly, there is no greater joy. It's not about charity or any Mother Teresa stuff. It's about the absolute, incomparable joy of seeing another being fly. And there's nothing like it. I invite everyone who hears this to find a way. You don't have to do it in India. It's nice if you come and visit, but just find a way to help each other fly. It's so good, so juicy, so nice.
Well, then on this note, we can all fly high in love and absorbing the energy that you share with us. You are a wonderful person, a wonderful being, and I'm so lucky that I've come across you and I had a chance to meet you and visit your place and talk to you and record these beautiful things that you shared with us.
Thank you guys for what you're doing. If we don't speak back, I mean, I've had at least 50, if not more, conversations here with people who watched Wild Wild and have sought me out saying, what was going on? Is that true? And we need to have sort resources where they can find out the truth, what you're doing, what so many books are coming out. Manisha's got one coming out. Good. Great. Thank you, Wild Wild Country, for sparking the interest. Now get ready to hear the truth. That's all I take it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Dwaba. I send you a loving hug, virtual hug through Skype, and I hope to see you soon in Rishikesh.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much for doing this, and let me know if there's anything else I can do. Really, I want the truth to be known for many, many reasons.
Thank you, Dwaba. Thank you so much.
Bye. Okay. All right. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed the show, help us to reach out to more people by rating this podcast and leaving a review on iTunes. We would really appreciate that, and it would help us spread the word even further. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you on the next show.